Welcome to the Firehouse Strength and Conditioning Podcast, where we discuss strength and conditioning and its place in the fire service. I'm Eric Haskins, and I'm a professional firefighter and strength and conditioning coach. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to my chat with Captain Steven Tyler from the Eagle Fire Department. In part two, we discuss skill acquisition, drill design, daily routines, expectations and standards, group workouts, his thoughts on the Georgia Smoke Diver program. We talk about how to become the go-to fitness guy in your fire department, and even a question from a guest host who may or may not be Jocko Willink. So with no further ado, here's part two of my discussion with Steven Tyler.
We talk pretty often with the folks that I work with, like, and I'm curious to know if you experience this too. Like, I train 5 to 6 days a week. I've been doing it for a long time. My nutrition's not as good as it should be. I have, you know, a little more fluff than I should have, but like, I'm fit. I'm not the most fit person I know. I'm not trying to overstate that, right? But like, I train and I'm fit. We constantly train for the job. So, you know, specific training, do some sort of drill, and I'm doing it and I go, I need to be more fit. That happens to me constantly.
Right.
And we have these conversations at the end of a drill, and I'll talk to someone, because thankfully I'm like super blessed. The people that I work with work hard on the drill ground and in the gym. None of us is a world-class athlete, but like, I work with people who are fit, and we get to like look each other in the eye and be like, I guess we got to get more fit. Like, how do people come out and do this stuff and not just like get humbled on a consistent basis? Because that's happening to me, where, you know, whatever it is, man, just force a door, stretch a line, and make a couple corners, and it's like, I can still be better. I did not bring too much fitness today, you know. Dude, you are fitter than I am. Are you still experiencing that? Like, at the end of a drill, like, I can get better.
Yeah, we were just doing search drills yesterday, and there was a lot of like, you know, great job, good job. I mean, you got John Metz out there, and he is just like, oh man, it was great. He was so fired up, man.
I wish he would be more positive, though. He's such a negative person.
Right? Yeah. Well, if you want to make him negative.
He is. It's lovely to be around him, man. Just all the smiles, all the positive energy.
So the next time you see him, make sure to share your opinion with him that the purpose of the squad on a residential structure fire is to set up rehab.
Got it.
And he'll, I think his tail will stop wagging a little bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I want to see.
He gets pretty fired up about that. So, no, there was a lot of high fives and that, like, oh man, it was good. And I, you know, I walked away from it like pretty disappointed. And it, you know, some people say it's because I have too high of like standards for myself, or I hold myself to too high of expectations. But I just get this, you know, feeling that we think we're better than we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, across the board. Mm-hmm. And like, that, I don't want to say that like scares me.
Sure.
But,
and just to be clear, like, that applies to me, and I think that applies to you. You know what I mean? Like, there are times when I do a drill and I'm like, I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, that worries me, because, you know, we're going to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I would say on a regular basis, after all these, like, when we're drilling, I'm like, that house wasn't on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had visibility. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we were doing drills without any smoke at all, and I did the thing, VS, go isolate the room. I look around, it's broad daylight. I'm like, room's clear. No, hold on. Just because, like, I can cheat here, like, I gotta go do the things, and just realizing that it's like, man, this is a lot harder, like, outside of this mm-hmm. drill. And so, yeah, I think I walk away probably from every drill like that should have been better.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's focus the next three rounds just on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
well, then another skill set starts to disappear.
That's
right.
That's right.
And so that's the trade-off. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
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 My time in training was the most frustrating time of my career because I just realized how incredibly hard it is to actually try to be good at all the things that we're asked to be good at.
So are you still on the mission of skill acquisition? Have you found the what you were looking for?
Yeah, I think I gained enough base level knowledge on skill acquisition. Like, I don't have probably the expertise that I would like to have, but I think I understand enough about how to build a foundation, essentially how to sort of like build neural pathways to build skill, how to practice at the edge of your abilities, how to incorporate mental reps with physical reps, that I have a useful working knowledge. I'm not nearly like to the level that I would like to be. A guy like my friend Chad Kane is like several standard deviations above me in the understanding of skill acquisition. He's working in the perfect job at Boise Fire for his knowledge. It's probably the most interesting thing to me about the job, but I also, there's so much like practical level stuff that I have to continue working on that I'm not sure I can dive much deeper down that rabbit hole yet. Maybe someday again I'll be on the desk and can do it, but
is that stuff that, all right, so knowing how do you incorporate that, your company officer now, mm-hmm. with your guys? Like if like, all right, now I just pegged you as the subject matter expert for skill acquisition.
Yeah.
And like you talked about earlier, That's great. Like, that carries high value to me because you just, like, I don't have the time to read all the books, to do all the things. So I can go to you and be like, just tell me what I need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, I get a lot of reps. We've had a lot of new people since I've been made as an officer and have had crews that are completely made up of people trying to promote. So we get a lot of reps with skill acquisition, even with veteran firefighters. But what it looks like practically is a lot of like, so much of it comes down to drill design. So much it comes down to like, just like setting them up for success to work on the one thing that is important, right? It's very easy to give them too much.
Mm-hmm.
Even a veteran who, you know, like it's very easy to make the drill too big. It's very easy to have too much make-believe. So drill design is like probably the thing I've learned to do not best, because we saw like there's so many obstacles to running a really good drill, particularly like I don't have drill grounds on my job, dude. Like, that gets really difficult. But trying to design the best possible drill to work on the one thing you're going to work on in that drill. And look, man, 10 minutes later, we can work on the next, or we can add a piece, but we're not going to start with Armageddon.
Right.
Start with a simple problem set and move linearly through some more problem sets, whether those are different or those are added in series. What I'm not trying to do is run essentially problem sets in parallel.
Right.
So that's one thing I've learned to do well, trying to get people to slow down is pretty important because I can see their actual process. Like forced entry is like a really classic example of like, a lot of people can get a door open, but their technique really isn't good. Right. So something I've started doing is like, hey man, I want you to nasal breathe through this entire rep, and they slow down. And number one, they get better because they're cognitively engaged.
Yeah.
But number two, their deficiencies become very, very clear, right? Because what they don't know about the skill becomes clear, right? They're no longer trying to overcome it through their work capacity or their strength.
Sure.
Right? They're simply moving the bar in the way that they need to move the bar.
Yeah.
And when they don't know how, it's clear as day, right? So
what a simple way to eliminate the noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would advocate like try that in some different modalities as well. Yeah. Try like throwing ladders, try, you know, flowing lines. Like,
yeah.
I think even, you know, we're getting a lot of practice on pump panel right now because my guy's trying to promote. So like, and we haven't done this specific to that problem. But if I had someone who like tended to just kind of like get overwhelmed and be like too twitchy, and that's exactly what I would do. Be like, hey, you're breathing through your nose this entire repetition, right? Mm. And like watch them slow down. Number one, watch them improve. Now they're going to build better pathways.
Yeah.
And then secondly, really becomes clear what their deficiencies are.
And does it over time become a go-to skill that they can use to calm down on the fire scene?
Right. I hope so.
So like,
yeah.
Like, do they have the ability to recognize that after it is mm-hmm. continually like used, that they find themselves on the pump panel mm-hmm. or they're forcing a door and they find themselves like overworking it, mm-hmm. right? And go like, no, you know, whether it's like tactical breathing, like there's mm-hmm. a bunch of different strategies, but does that turn into now a tool for them to get it back in the prefrontal cortex?
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
I dig that. So what does your day look like with your company?
It's not as crazy. It's actually, I don't know, to me it just seems super normal, right? We get on, we check the rigs.
First nap,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Obviously.
Right? Yeah.
I know some places, dude, they show up and then they clean. Do you guys clean first? That's like a fairly prevalent thing that blows my mind.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah. We don't do that, thankfully. I mean, we show up, check rigs, check gear. My people do that well, thankfully. Talk a little bit about the day. I'm trying to just like make a plan for the day, but also be flexible, right? So like, here's the rough outline, and then ask what they've got. So what do you have that you want to work on? And what I'm doing also when I'm talking with the crew is like trying to gauge their temperature as well.
Sure.
I don't find it super useful to be like, well, it depends on the person, right? For the most part, I can't be like, Eric, how are you doing today? He's like, what are you going to tell me?
Fine.
I'm good, bro.
Which like, my wife tells me fine.
Yeah. How was 4 day? Good. Yeah. Right. Like, but what I'm trying to pick up on the cues, because I know you built a relationship. I'm trying to pick up on the cues of like, how are they? You know, where are they at? Thankfully I've got like pretty steady people and I can tell like when something is like not right. But that also doesn't mean they're not good to go. You know, it just kind of like gives me like, I know what I need to ask about later, or maybe we're going to have to alter some different things about, you know, the day or the tour. We work 48s, right? So yeah, man, usually, so I don't like to cook breakfast. I hate cooking breakfast.
Like eating breakfast?
I like to eat a little bit of food in the morning.
Okay.
But taking the time to cook is like, I hate doing that. I like to cook dinner.
Yeah.
But like, I just kind of want to get going. I work with people who like to cook breakfast. So like, you know, I'm flexible, right? This is an us thing, not a me thing. So we take the time to cook breakfast. Usually first thing day one, we go to the store, grab food for the tour. And the morning's kind of like, you know, generally come back, work out. We work out, you know, sometimes into lunch. So like, yeah, man, mornings is kind of like eat some food, go get food if we need it, work out, and then work on whatever you need to work on, man. Like, do you need to do your target solutions assignments? You know, please do that. Afternoon, we just like understand implicitly there's going to be a drill every afternoon. Sometimes that's very physical. Sometimes it's on a whiteboard. A lot of times it's both. But we're going to drill in the afternoon. We're going to have dinner together. We sit down, we eat dinner together, even if someone has like a different, you know, a different plan they're on, they're making their own food, that's fine, but we're going to sit down, we're going to eat together. And, you know, maybe a third of the time we drill after dinner. All this is like, you know, of course, subject to calls and,
sure,
and the interruptions, but like, yeah, especially when we got guys trying to promote or new people working on their task books and stuff, we'll get out and drill after dinner, you know, fairly often. Sometimes we do a little group stretchy stretch, little ROMWOD or something like that. Yeah,
All right.
That's become part of a little bit of part of the crew culture. And then, yeah, man, just try to get to bed at a decent time. Never know how much sleep we're going to get. Sometimes we're better than that than others. But, like, I would say about my crew, man, that's like we have food in our hand, we have hose in our hand, or we have, like, a barbell in our hand. Like, it just – and I know that's a little bit of an oversimplification, but, like,
sure.
That's kind of like – that's our culture,
yeah.
Right? We sit down and eat, and then, like, when we're done eating, we hang out and, like, we have family time,
yeah.
Right? We work out, and our workouts are not – you know, they're not 30 minutes, man. Like, they take time. And then we train. So,
cool.
Yeah. That's just kind of like our company culture.
Do you have any, like, non-negotiables? Like, regardless of the day and the interruptions?
Yeah.
Like, as things start to fill up and then interrupted and things, like, start getting, like, tossed, is there anything, mm-hmm. like, in that day that, like, either you as the company officer or just as your crew's culture that's like, yeah, regardless of what happens today, like, we're going to do this thing or we're going to do at least get, you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Yeah. So, like, first of all, strongly believe and I'm convinced that, like, we're there to go on calls, right? So, like, yes, that inconveniences our plans. That's okay, right? So the non-negotiables are like, we're going to approach the calls like professionals and like give whatever, whether it's a smoke detector change or structure fire, like we're going to give those people our best as professionals. Secondly, like it's really important to me to like do what I say I'm going to do. So that is specific to drill, especially. And that doesn't mean it can't be altered or changed or edited to fit whatever time we have. Like, again, specifically to people who are like, they're counting on me to give them what they need. This person is trying to promote. They have a test coming up. They have a task book that, you know, they're on probation and the time is coming. It's totally not acceptable for me to be like, we're not going to get to that task book thing today. It's like, dude, like I said I was going to do that and we're going to do that.
Yeah.
So sometimes that does end up being late. And sometimes that does end up meaning we don't eat till, you know, 1:30. We don't have lunch till late or whatever.
Sure.
Try to be flexible, but also like, but do what I say I'm going to do. I am more likely to give up a workout than to give up a drill. And like, I don't like that because I want to work out and yeah. I'm like, they know that. And like, thankfully I work with people who also find fitness important, but like they know that I'm a better version of myself if I get to work out.
Yeah.
Right. And so everyone wants that for each other. But like sometimes the calendar just fills up. And that does. So that's not a non-negotiable, but I think I came up with this terminology like when I was new and I was frustrated with a captain. I was like, I want to do everything I can when I'm an officer to keep training and workouts sacred, right? It's not to say that nothing can ever stop them, but it's like, we're really going to do what we can. Like I'll put drills on the operations calendar. Engine 43 is going to wherever to drill. Yeah. For 90 minutes, then we don't get some goofy thing that steps on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't do that daily, but like when I know, hey, like I've got to work on this skill with my driver who's trying to promote to officer, I've got to get this drill done for him.
Yeah.
90 minutes on the calendar the next day, right? That way nothing steps on it except for calls, and calls are the most important thing.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, we don't end up with something goofy that we have to go do.
I think it's super valuable protecting your time, right?
Trying to.
Yeah.
And while remaining necessarily flexible.
Sure.
It's a difficult tension to manage.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the best version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about this other version of yourself. He goes by, is it Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's got an alter ego, man. Or like, I don't know if it's truly an alter ego, but like, I would imagine when you, right, like when I'm making bad food decisions. So I did this two nights ago. This is something I do at dinner. So my wife makes dinner most of the time. We have like a little more of a traditional family. That's not a value statement. It's just what our life is like. Most of the time, my wife makes dinner. And so that's great, right? I know like she's super consistent. I know when dinner's going to be made and like I like to help out and like all those sorts of things. But like Jess was busy the other night. She was going to book club. And so, like, dinner's on me. And, like, look, dude, she set me up for success, right? Like, it's ready. I just have to put it in the oven. And that's fine. But what am I doing from 5:30 to 6 while the thing's in the oven? I'm smashing chips and salsa. My neighbor across the street has a catering company, and he just brings us food all the time. Amazing Mexican food. And he had this, like, pineapple salsa. And I ate the whole thing, dude. I ate the whole jar of pineapple salsa, right? And so, like, there are these patterns that I fall into when I'm not being the best version of myself. That's like the nutrition pattern, right? Is like, I'll overeat, right? When something tastes delicious, like I just will. I won't have the discipline to be like, dinner's in 30 minutes, yeah. Just wait. So yeah. Like, that's the worst version of myself in that way. When I'm not having like maybe the most self-control, especially in a relational aspect, like that person has patterns of speaking and behaving. And I call that person Steve.
Okay.
Right. So it's just like, for me, a way of naming those behaviors.
Sure.
That generally aren't healthy. There are times like when I will, I don't know, man, like there are times to let emotion show, right? Where that is positive. Now, we don't want to be ruled by our emotions, right? There certainly are times where an emotion is called for. So sometimes I let Steve loose, right? Like, let the dog out of the cage, right? But then sometimes Steve, like, sneaks out from a board, you know, or, like, dug a hole under the fence kind of a thing. So, yeah, man, it's just my way of, like, trying to, like, name those behaviors and, yeah. And rule them to the best of my ability. But, yeah,
all right.
Steve is somewhat of a legend now at work. So I'll just walk into a firehouse and, like, Captain Gall on station one would be like, so who do I got today? Steven or Steve? I'm like, fuck you guys.
Taking on a life of his own?
Yeah, a little
good.
Bit.
Good.
Yeah.
Thinking about your company and kind of where I want to take this, I want to talk about standards.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, say, you kind of talked about the standard you hold yourself to? Standard you hold your crew to?
So I have like, you know, like expectations, right? Like I think it's becoming a fairly ubiquitous thing in companies in the fire service is like an officer has expectations that he shares with the crew. And my expectations certainly include like, this is what you should expect of me as well. And, you know, 100%, you know, speak to me like you, I am right now giving you permission, though I don't have to do that as a human, but like make sure that I make it safe. They're like, you are not only allowed to, but supposed to talk to me if I'm not meeting expectations, right? When it comes to standards, man, like I don't have a lot of standards like in terms of, well, we're going to run this drill and we're going to do it in under 3 minutes, you know, or we're going to do it again, right? What I expect of my people and myself is all pretty basic stuff. And it's like that we're going to put the public first, right? Like we're going to go to calls and treat every call like it's important, right? We're going to have each other's backs, right? We're going to care for each other personally, professionally. Like these are some of the expectations. And I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head. One of them is like, we are, it's like, we believe that fitness is one of the ways that we serve the public. And that's not the exact terminology, but it's basically, we stay in, it, well, that is what, that the bold says, we stay in shape,
okay.
Right? And then the expectation, the explanation is like, yeah, man, that's one way that we express our commitment to the public.
Mm.
The next is like, we train. That's one way that we express the commitment to the public. So the only way that like a crew member can break the standard or not meet the standard is by essentially like not being willing to work out when we have time to work out, not giving their best when we train, treating a call like it's unimportant, you know, not being willing to contribute to making the plan for the day, not being willing to be flexible about the plan for the day. Like those are the things on the expectation, man. And like, if those, like that's all someone has to do. Like they don't have to succeed every time. They don't have to have a 7 minute mile time or, you know, bench 315 or
yeah.
Like, those are the things that I want. Right. And that's just what I think those are the byproduct of the culture. Right. Like, so like methods can change, but principles stay the same. It's like, look, we are going to train. We are going to do our best to be fit. And we're going to put the public first and treat every call like it's important, right? Like, then the methods can change based on personalities, based on goals, you know, based on whatever's going on. But, like, the principles always stay the same. So, like, I guess the expectations, the standards are the principles. And then we'll do what we can, like, to meet those.
Right.
Some people come out, man, and they're like, dude, I've had such good crews as an officer. Like, I've been super, super, super blessed. They make me way, way better than I am. And I've just had, like, very few. So I've had a few, but I've had, like, not a ton of challenges, right? So, like, for the most part, dude, it's not hard. You know, you just, like, you say what you're going to do. You have a good environment. You care about people. And people respond to that positively.
All right.
All right.
So, since... All right, so you get a new firefighter to your crew. Say he's unfit, mm-hmm. unmotivated. How do you handle that?
Yeah, like, what are you willing to do? I think is a big... So we would, like, have a conversation about how I feel about those things. We would have a conversation about the culture. Thankfully, I have help on those in that arena. We have a minimum of 3 and then up to 4 people on duty every day. So, like, I'm going to have someone else who's also carrying the company expectation and, like, contributing to the culture every day. So we're just going to have a conversation about, like, what the culture is here, what the expectation is here. And, like, look, like, whatever it is, whatever their weakness is, like, I know you're not going to fix it tomorrow. But what I need is for you to be 1% better tomorrow. And what I need is, like, 1% better the next day. And, like, really, you know, probably better over the 4 day and then better again next tour. And then ask them a question for what are you willing to do about it, right? And then their answer is their answer. Hopefully it's sufficient. And if I feel like they're taking that seriously at all, you know, then I'm not going to try to build that answer for them.
Right.
Right. It's super important that they come to, that they build that for themselves. And then the last question is, like, how can I help? And maybe I'll even say, I think I can help in this way. What do you think? Right. But, like, they've got to really make the plan for themselves, or not even the plan, but, like, the goal.
Sure.
Like, what are you willing to do about it? That's sort of like the goal. Maybe they'll have some specifics, and then how can I help?
It's good. I like that. Yeah, that seems to be a challenge for many. Mm-hmm. Get asked about, you know, and especially most questions I get are about, you know, like, fitness in the fire service and those things. But what do you do with the person that is unmotivated, mm-hmm. doesn't want to work out, mm-hmm. you know? And I like that idea of, like, we'll have them design the goal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's good.
And that is different depending on the person's position, yeah. right? Like, I get to essentially set a standard as the officer. But, like you said, I need that help too. Like, having that other person in the firehouse, even if we're just 3, you know, where you're outnumbered if you're not working hard. You're right. Outnumbered if you're in the recliner at an inappropriate time. That's super helpful. So that's a way that, like, a firefighter or a driver can assist their company culture. Maybe it's 2 firefighters, right? Like, you're a 4-man company. Maybe the 2 of you are driving the company forward in that mm-hmm. way. Ideally, like, the supervisor, the crew leader has that. But it can be done other ways as well.
Sure. Yeah. You think there should be physical standards for the fire service?
Yeah, man.
Outside of, yeah, I'll let you go.
No, it's like, there's certain things that are, like, that I'm just exhausted with. I don't know how you feel this. You haven't been in quite as long, but you are also in more deeply in this arena than I am. So, like, maybe, I don't know. I hope you're not exhausted by it. I care about what we're supposed to do. And I care about the people who are supposed to do it, being us, being the brothers and sisters, right? That's why physical standards are important to me. I have probably been guilty of, like, too much bluster and bravado mm-hmm. on this topic in the past, and there certainly is plenty of that on the media social. And I understand all the like the motivations behind that. But what we're talking about here is real people with real circumstances that have led them into whatever it is that is leading them to be like less prepared for the job. So I want to treat them like people and not like just essentially like shout talking points at them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a physical standard, right? It's for everyone's good. Mm-hmm. It's for my wife and my children's good. It's for the good of the people we're going to go serve so that we can give the best possible service. And it's good for the firefighter who like wants to do well, wants to be healthy now. And I don't want to see people going into retirement fat, sick, and broken. And like, it's good, right? Like this is a good thing across the board to have physical standards.
And the purpose of it is positive and good. Not once did I hear you say it was to take jobs or to get people fired. It was for the longevity of their career and for the service of others.
Yeah. It would be terrible if a person got fired because they couldn't meet the physical standard. Like, that's not what I want. Mm-hmm. And it should be a long road for a person to, like, who is not meeting the standard to not be able to serve in that capacity anymore. So I hope no one ever, like, I hope that's not the message that people hear when someone like me is pushing for physical standards.
Yeah.
Like, I want it for all of the good that it provides.
Right. I think that's important because the common like pushback I get is about what people are going to lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. People are going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And that's often where that gets lost in.
Yeah.
That's the noise it gets lost in.
Yeah. I would love to be so confident in whatever our physical preparation was for that standard. They'd be like, no, they're not. You know, like it's really interesting that someone would say like, oh, we can't have physical standards because there's no way we're going to meet them. So people are going to get fired. I would like to be so confident in our physical preparation, be like, nope, all people have to do is this program and they're all going to make it. Like, fuck that, dude. Fuck getting fired. What they're going to do is this awesome program. They're going to get stronger, fitter, healthier, better here, better at home, better for the rest of their life. You know, like I reject your presupposition that our people aren't good enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I don't know, man. Like maybe there's a program people could do where they could be good enough to meet a really reasonable standard.
Yeah.
No one has to run a 4-minute mile, you know, like to be a firefighter or do 1,000 burpees, right? Like it can be very job focused and very reasonable. And like, I do believe that people, anyone that I work with, anyone I've ever met that wears a, you know, that wears a Maltese cross, man, that they could like apply themselves to a program and they could do it.
Yeah. All right. Switch gears, kind of. Can you think of a like specific moment, job, call, where, say, you know, like strength and conditioning, like be it a program or whatever you were doing, like made a difference in that moment? Like, have you ever had that moment? You know, or maybe it was up on. Well, I don't want to lead you too much, but you know.
That's interesting, man, because it's like you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Right? I have been in several situations, everything from like EMS, structure fires, water rescues, wildland fires, definitely, where I'm doing what is difficult but very doable. And like looking around me and there are people who cannot.
Right.
Right. Like, so the very first thing that comes to mind is like a wildland fire several years ago. And we pull up and the driver's like, I can drive up that. And I'm like, no, you can't. No way. and a couple of us bail off with tools, and we're just like digging line up this hill. And it's just cheat grass, but every so often, like a big, you know, 5 or 6 foot sage is torching off, and it's like, it's real hot. And we're just like going, dude. Like, it's great. It's fun. It's dark. Like, it's nighttime. You know, wildland fires look better at night. And like, all of a sudden, like, the truck comes around, and like, that driver did find a way. And I was like, no, you are a good driver. Yeah. Like, let's go, dude. And I thought the captain was, we were a four person company. I thought the captain was with the driver and he wasn't in the rig. And I'm like, where is so-and-so? He's like, he came up after you guys. And I'm like looking down. I'm like, I don't see him. So we have to wait. You know, we're kind of like slowly like digging some line. I'm like, we got maybe going to have to go check on this guy like very, very soon.
Yeah.
Like eventually see a headlight and like, or a headlamp light. And, yeah, like I thought that by the time that person made it to us, like I was very concerned for his health in that exact moment. Like maybe we were going to have to do CPR.
Right.
And it was just like me and another guy that were digging line. It was actually, I think it was the guy who's my driver now. And just like doing it, right? And like, I don't know. That didn't, I wasn't digging line being like, gosh, I'm just awful glad that I work out.
Right.
You know? But it was just like we were doing it. And we were able to do something that day that like someone who was untrained was very much not able to do it, just walking, right? Like,
yeah.
Like that person wasn't swinging a tool like we were, and couldn't come even close to keeping up with us. And again, like not trying to paint myself as some super athlete because so yeah, man. Yeah, there are things like, you know, through strength and skill training, like taught myself to, learned how, I shouldn't say taught myself, like went through the process of like learning how to throw really heavy ladders and have, yeah, like thrown 20 and 35 foot ladders by myself on fire scenes. That in my culture, that's not particularly special. There's, you know, many people who can do that, but there's also many who can't. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like, I don't know, things like that where it's like not a big deal,
right,
to go throw that ladder by oneself. And let the rest of the crew, like, you know, it's essentially like a force multiplier, right? When only one person has to throw a ladder, we can do more work. Someone else can bring more tools.
Yep. Yeah. More hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ask, I get like messages and I talk to people and they're cool. I enjoy the feedback. And I think back to like an old captain that he was a really good like learning experience for me about motivation.
Mm-hmm.
and you know how you get through to people that like just want no part in, mm-hmm. in what you're trying to do. And you know, a long story short there is you know, he started, you know, joining us, training with us and working out and you know, everything seemed to get better. But he came back from a hunting trip and he was just like ecstatic. And he wanted to tell me this story. He's like, man, I didn't realize it, but you know, this last trip, I lifted the generator off of my truck for the first time ever by myself. I had no idea until my buddies were like, hey, like, are you okay? Like, we've never seen you do that before. And that was like the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That it clicked for him,
mm-hmm.
that like the stuff we're doing just like paid off for him, yeah. somewhere. And yeah. that was a big like switch when I talk about like, well, some people are motivated by the off duty.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and then he was hooked after that.
Right.
And he would, you know, I take forever on my rig checks because, you know, I start my day with Bob Seger and I like, I'm doing my thing. But he would be out there at 8:30 tapping his watch, like after that whole moment, every morning, like, when are we, like the workout starts now.
Let's go.
And he was in the last year of his career. And so it was just like, so that's the thing.
Yeah.
Is you find what it does, because, well, I tell him that, yeah, man, this is going to make you better on your hunting trip. And like we talked about, yeah, it's also going to make you better at this other thing that we're doing over here too. And then, you know, I'll get phone calls and stuff of like, yeah, I got a job last night. I was venting a roof And after I was done and came down from the ladder, it was like the first time that I'd never like hit vibe. And I just thought, well, like, that's weird. Like, that was the easiest it's ever been. And I don't know why. And then, you know, he calls me and like, hey, like, I think this thing that you're doing. And I'm like, ah, it could be it, man. Yeah. Could be working. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But so, yeah, I was curious if you had any of those moments.
I do. Like, so something specific that happened that I forgot about too, mentioning those. I went to North Carolina Breathing Equipment School last March. It's a cool school. Learned a lot. It's a RIT training. And the final drill is quite extended, and it's difficult. And I was the leader of a crew, and we found the downed firefighter. And they were on a half landing of a stairway. And they were bringing him down, and I couldn't quite figure out why they were having trouble. It was two firefighters, and they were, you know, smaller folks. You know, not like super unfit. I mean, they were there at the class, but also like probably not like specimens, you know, or anything. And I like couldn't figure out why they couldn't, like, what was going on exactly. And it was a live victim. His name is Jay. And so like, I finally just like get fed up, and I reach up to the half landing with a hand like on the wall behind me, and I go, sorry, Jay. And with one hand, just like yank him down five stairs to the next, you know, to the landing. And I was like, that was really cool. That was, you know, like, yeah. Even in the moment, I was like, you know, like, that was really, and Jay, like, I just totally manhandled him, right? And he's like, good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So that was a cool moment. That was a difficult evolution and everything. Like, we were deep into the building at that time. So we'd already worked, you know. Yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. Like, it took endurance and conditioning to get all the way there and like still and have something in the tank. And then it took like a good deal of strength just to be able to pull.
Yeah.
And yeah. No, cool. That was pretty fun.
Cool. What about, had any moments where your body has failed you?
Yeah, like, I remember specifically, this was years ago, so this is before Firehouse Strength and Conditioning. And if I, as we talk and think more, I will find others, I'm sure. But I remember being at a structure fire, and it was like 4 a.m. And I think that was the 5th of July. I think it had been the 4th of July. So it had been a long tour. And we were just RIT at that point. We had done some salvage and overhaul, you know, some difficult work, but nothing crazy. And so we're on our second bottle, we're standing around, we're RIT, and I'm just on my feet, and I'm like exhausted, dude. I'm just like, I want to go lay down, dude. I cannot, like, it was just like, I was just done. I was just smoked, right? And that was a time before I really learned the importance of sleep, and I was trying to Jocko this thing, wake up at 5 every morning, grind, you know, like, and that for me was a wake up on sleep, right? Like, I was essentially just totally sleep deprived, and wasn't able to access all the things my body could do at that time. Like, I was fit. It's not that I really exceeded the demand of what my body was capable of, is that I essentially just been starving it, you know. I was chronically sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And just standing there with my gear on, and just like, it felt like it weighed 1,000 pounds.
Huh.
Yeah.
So what did you do to change that?
I started sleeping.
Okay, good for you.
No, so right. It wasn't immediate, but I kind of like bumped into the work of Kirk Parsley, Dr. Parsley.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Man, when he said like, hey, so chronic sleep deprivation and traumatic brain injury have the exact same symptomatic presentation. I was like, that doesn't seem good. That doesn't seem good at all.
Yeah.
Right. So just trying again to like, kind of like we talked about with training and fitness at the job, like try to keep sleep a bit more sacred. Clearly that's out of our hands at work. But I can make better decisions about my sleep hygiene. I can make sure that it's dark. I can make sure that I'm not staring at a screen before I go to bed. I can go to bed early so I can get as much sleep as I can before that next call comes in. I cannot be weird about wake up times. Like, again, we work out or we work 48s. Like, I'm not asking my guys to be up at 6:30 on day 2.
Right.
Like, get some rest.
Yeah.
You know? sleep hygiene at home, blackout curtains.
You got a chili pad?
I don't.
Oh, dude.
I am kind of obsessed about temperature. We keep it cold at the station. Oh, okay. Bro. Like cold, cold. too cold for some people.
Yeah.
You know, we try to keep it cold at home. I have a house, single story house with a basement. It's summertime. Like I sneak out of bed and go downstairs almost every night. You know,
really?
And like go sleep downstairs. Like, go to bed with mama. You know, like
yeah.
But yeah, wake up if I'm warm. I'm going downstairs. Like,
man, I probably can't recommend like something like, you know, now there's tons of like products out mm-hmm. there, but years ago. I got a chili pad.
Yeah.
And my wife was like, "You did what? What is this thing?" But, you know, we were having the argument. Like, so my previous life, I spent most of my time on a mountaintop somewhere mm-hmm. or in an ice rink. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, you know, and I don't do well with heat. So I decided to join the fire service.
Let's go.
and so I'm in this constant battle with her, with the thermostat.
Yeah,
she needs it hot, and I'm like, I can't do it. So, anyways, and the chili pad, when I explained what it was, she was like, "How much is it?" And yeah, it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that it's probably had, you know, other than like just like choosing not to drink,
mm-hmm.
like that has had the biggest impact on like my sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I introduced a bunch of people to it at work. And so, and I was like, "Hey, it's a 90-day money-back guarantee," you know, which apparently it isn't anymore. So, like, I don't remember. But, and so, like, they got them. They're like, "Yeah, we're just going to send them back after 90 days." And 30 days later, they had more. So, they had bought them at home. And now the whole crew bought them at the station.
No kidding. Do you have one at work?
No.
Okay.
No. But they got them all, like, so this was Station 5. It was Frank and Mike and all these dudes. And they were like, "Yeah, we got chili pack." Like, they, like, swear by it now.
Okay.
It's made a huge impact. So they are expensive. But, you know, I struggle a lot with sleep. And,
yeah,
and
so sleep's that, everything.
Like, that, that's something that I'm always trying, like, searching for ways to optimize because of all the things that you're talking mm-hmm. about. It's like, this is... We are, in a sense, in control of this, not on duty. So at home, just trying to like optimize it as best as I can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
You guys work out. We talked about this a little bit. Do you do crew workouts?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you just doing something from the program? How do you like sort of adapt it to make it work?
Yes. Yeah, so my department is on our like department subscription, mm-hmm. which is super cool that they got on the program. And really what ended up happening is there was enough people in the department doing it that they were like, "Well, do you offer like a group discount?"
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, I work with the fire departments anyway. So there's a lot of people following the program. And some of us will do the workout together. And yeah, I think when it comes to group workouts, depending on what station we're at, we're always modifying to get everyone to do it. And so if you're at like the Big House Station 1, we just converted our racquetball court to like a full-on gym.
Yeah.
The racquetball purists are still like, you know, raising their pitchforks. But having that bigger space has made a big difference for us because now it's really opened up the doors for people to work out together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say all of our stations, group workouts, or we're modifying in some way, taking it out into the bay, so that we can work out together. I don't know if that answers your question.
That does answer my question.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about how to make that actionable for others, like, because not everyone has a racquetball court, right? But
most of our outlying stations, everything is getting pulled out into the bay.
Yeah.
You know, and that seems to be the place or like the back apron.
Yep.
And I would even love to see us do more on the front apron.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of, like, I would love for the public to drive by
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're always doing sleds and, you know, anything like that is happening out on our front apron. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important that, like, the citizens, when they drive by, that's what they see us doing, you know. Yeah, I've been sitting on this question for a while. And so, yeah, I'm glad I get to ask.
Let's do it. Send it.
What scares you about the Georgia Smoke Diver Program?
You're presupposing that I'm scared.
Are you not scared of the Georgia
Smoke Diver Program? I'm a little scared.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you mentioned the 1,000 burpee thing earlier, and this was actually the first thing I thought about. Was like, you would have to ask why, right? So I see guys like you, some of my good friends, people I have a lot of respect for, who go through the Georgia Smoke Diver Program and speak really highly of it. Then they say things about it that make me want to blow my brains out, right? Like listening to what the PT is like, I know that me as a person, right? And this might be a flaw, dude. It probably is a flaw. So like, but just like full disclosure, like, you know, like if someone is yelling at me to do arm circles for longer, like, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about your arm circles. And I reject the idea that it's connected at all to my performance on the fire ground, right? Like,
sure.
I don't want to piss my pants in the, like, I reject that I have to piss my pants in order to, like, undergo strong fire ground training.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I'm just not going to, I'm not going to complete it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way, dude, because, and maybe like I will absorb any criticism that anyone has that like you're weak, you're like, you don't get it. Like, that's fine. Right. I absorb all of that. Right. And just like, I won't pass.
Yeah.
If Georgia Smoke Divers did an O course to make sure that you were fit enough to undergo the training and then did just the fire ground training, I'd have been there years ago.
Yeah.
Right. And understanding that I may fail, like I may not pass.
Yeah.
Right. But I would submit myself to that process. I'm not going to submit myself to getting yelled at by some guy who did Georgia Smoke Divers 15 years ago. Right. While I'm doing arm circles.
Like, cool.
I'm just, I know me, you know, it's, I was about to, No, I'm not going to pass, you know? And so I'm going to go do something else that maybe, you know, 50-50 shot, maybe I'll pass.
Sure.
So
it's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's super impressive. Like the fortitude to submit yourself to that process and submit yourself to all the things that I just said that I know that I'm like wouldn't be able to overcome is very impressive. So, like, I have a lot of respect for those who've done it.
Yeah, I think, like, I can't stand, like, the talk of if someone were to tell you, like, you're weak or you're lesser because you won't go.
Right.
That's not what that program's about.
Right.
And, you know, David Rhodes, I think, did such a good job of as people like didn't graduate and wouldn't make it, like they are not a failure walking away from that. And I think that that's a really important aspect of like just to like you know, you could quote Teddy Roosevelt, right? Like the man in the arena, right? And to go for it, like there's something to be said for that. And then to know that like that's not your thing, like there's something to be said for that too.
I guess.
And,
so.
And I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate
so
it.
I don't I think you had mentioned a comment like that. It was probably a year or two ago, and I kept in the back of my head, and I was like, "Man, if I ever have a podcast on that," because you had made it a sly remark. Yeah. So I'm like, "Oh, okay." Yeah. But no, I appreciate your honesty, and I think it's important to say that. So
yeah, it's good. Yeah, I hope that's not a negative reflection on the program. Like, again, the people that do it, ton of respect, man.
Yeah,
ton of respect.
All good.
Yeah. This will take a minute, but I think it's pretty good. How would you respond to the person who wants to like become that fitness person at their department? Like, they're interested in it, they're passionate, they want to help their department grow, again, like in all the positive ways to make it good for everyone. Like, how does that person get started? Like, what's the best thing for them to do to establish credibility within, like, both with their administration and the line guys? And like, what are sort of like the things they need to know if they're going to try to, for example, make a physical test, or even be the person who's allowed to administer that physical test, or whatever that looks like?
That's a good question. And I would say that my first thing would be to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so that answer is to the person that maybe already has, you know, whether it's peer fitness trainers or something, and he wants to be a part of that, mm-hmm. right? And so we have a lot of interest. We've been doing a lot of hiring, a lot of like young members coming in that are fired up. They had a great experience during their physical training in their academy, and they want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to be peer fitness trainers, but you know, we only have so many or whatever.
Yeah.
And my recommendation to them is to get involved. Like, we in my department, like, everyone is invited. Like, when we're doing PT with recruits, everybody's invited.
That's right.
And you know, we have remodeled buildings at our training grounds that were just full of like junk and storage, and now turn them into like gyms.
Mm-hmm.
And that is open to anyone to come, like off duty, on duty. And so we're trying to build this environment, and all you have to do is just express your interest that you want to get involved. So if you can do that, and what we do with those people is bring them in, and they just start helping with whatever we're doing as far as like our pure fitness training. And then my goal is to now start like bringing them along and really figure out like what their like specialty is. Because like, you know, say like right now in our PT program, what we're doing with the recruits, we've got you know, different days and modalities, and some days are like zone 2 training days, right? And we've got a couple of guys that are into endurance, like sports, that all they had to do is like, hey, I want to get involved. And it's like, hey, you know, we're going on a 20-minute zone 2 run. And they're like, and so we bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's the perfect fit for them. And then as they start like understanding what the role is within their department, what the department's goals are, then like no one is off limits to join. They just might not hold the title.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And so all that's to say is I would encourage that person to just get involved and go up and whoever is the fitness person to just say, how can I help? And hopefully they're in a position where they go, I would love your help. I'd also like to teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know? Because they could be a tool. Like, hey, I know this thing about, you know, maybe the guy's like, yeah, I've got a background in powerlifting. And I'd be like, awesome. Like, can you teach, like, our members how to do a deadlift?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need a certification for that. Like, all these things.
Yeah.
And so figure out what, you know, if you've got those strengths, it's like you can be an asset to your department. The other side of that is thinking about, like, the member that wants to be the fitness guy and they don't have a fitness culture, like, at all.
Right.
And that can be challenging. Like, where do they start? They have no one to go to. And that's where I think it's going to require them to, like, get outside of, you know, their silo, right? And start reaching out to departments that do have, like, a culture of fitness and start asking questions. And then go visit those places and like try to figure out what they're doing. You don't have to, like, I've got a weird thing on like certifications. Like, man, I know a lot of people with a lot of initials that don't know how to teach like someone to do an air squat, and that like can't tell someone how to do a push up. And it's like, man, they could write the best like program by the book ever, but when it came to coaching, they just stand on the wall, mm-hmm. and like that person's useless. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of, you know, theory without experience. Knowledge without experience is just theory.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
And then knowledge with experience is wisdom, right? And so for that person, I would encourage them to find a mentor, reach out. There was this idea of like Tim Ferriss, and I forget what he called it, but it was like the 20K bachelor. Anyways, his point was like, take all that money that you...
Oh, the personal MBA.
Personal MBA.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that concept. Mm-hmm. And I think in the world of like exercise science, mm-hmm. and strength and conditioning, like that could get a lot of mileage.
Yeah.
Like if you wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach, one of the best things you could do is go find someone that has been doing it for a long time and go start hanging out with them.
Right. Like, even if it costs you money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe better than getting your bachelor's, getting your CSCS, you know, getting a master's in kinesiology or whatever sort of, right? Like actually plugging into people who are in the arena.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think not only would it be like significantly cheaper, but it would, the your learning curve and like the trajectory would be so much faster because they've already made all the mistakes. And I've had some really like key mentors in my life that have like fast tracked me like beyond belief. And there's a guy out in Michigan, his name is Doug Chapman. And you know, he took me under his wing and I took every opportunity. I would send him emails of saying, hey, I'm coming out to visit my brother in Detroit. Like, can I just come and shadow you for a week? Like while my brother's doing his thing. And he was like, absolutely. And, you know, that didn't cost me a thing. I was out there, right? And then guys like Chris Henshaw, like he's an incredible, and he's a good friend, but he's always a phone call away. And so when I have questions, I reach out to these people that have already, like, they've made all the mistakes. They know all the things. And, you know, they plug me in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that would be my recommendation. I think there are good programs out there. Like if you want to start up something, I think there are some conferences and there are some places you can go to that will give you like, you know, you could go to something like the TSAC conference.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of good classes there, but it's going to be a great like networking event for you to get plugged in with like leaders in the community that can really help you like move along, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So I did this fun thing. Kind of blows this whole AI thing is like blowing my mind. Blowing my mind.
I've never been scared of technology. I'm not like a Luddite. I'm scared of technology now.
Yeah. Like the Skynet is going to be self-aware very soon, if it's not already.
Pretty wild.
So I was typing in, I go, you know, I've got this podcast and trying to figure out, like, I wanted questions for Steven Tyler, the firefighter.
You asked AI?
And then started, like, playing with it. So I got this idea from somebody else, but I was like, I want a question. In a podcast interview, but in the tone of. And Jocko was one.
Good.
Dude, and it just hammers out these questions, and I'm like okay, like those aren't bad. So I'm going to ask you if Jocko was hosting this podcast, this is what he would ask.
Okay. This is hilarious.
All right. Can you discuss the role of discipline and consistency in achieving long-term strength and conditioning goals for firefighters?
equals
freedom. Yeah, I was like, discipline equals freedom. Yeah. You know what's funny, man? I'm a Christian, and I've found that some of the things Jocko says are like actually have really good theology behind them, and like discipline equals freedom is one of those. But like, discipline, that's really funny. But like, to answer it seriously, like it is the idea of like 1% better every day. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to be motivated to do some crazy challenge. Like, you just literally submit yourself to the process.
Yeah.
Right. And just be consistent.
That's it.
Yeah.
Show up.
Show up.
That's it. Yeah.
Brother.
Okay.
Oh, God. All right. Well, Steven, that's all I got for you, man.
Dude, I love talking with you. So,
yeah.
Even with the weirdness of the microphones and the try not to make too much noise, and I know my voice, like I'm always changing volume, so you have some editing trouble in front of you, but
yeah,
dude, I just love talking with you about the job and fitness, and thank you for not being a single issue voter on fitness. Thank you for being someone who actually loves the job and all of it, and not just obsessed with one piece of it. I appreciate that about you.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
All right. Well, until next time, I think he agreed off air, possibly co-hosting this and doing all the editing. So, until next time, thanks for listening.
Thanks, Blake.